Okay, so I'm going to, well, like you said, talk about collaborative video on Wikipedia. I've been working, well, I started the MetaVid project as a thesis project 2 or 3 years ago now. And then, but for the last 6 months, I've been working on sort of bringing or generalizing that work for use within Wikimedia and working at the San Francisco office of the Wikimedia Foundation. But first, let's do a quick overview. First, I'll go over why open media is important, particularly for Wikimedia, and the reasoning behind going with open media. Obviously, it would have been a lot easier if they just started throwing Flash up on the site, but there's some reasons for making that alternate choice. And then also, and then that alternate choice presents a lot of challenges, and sort of look at how the community's addressing them. And then we'll do a little technology overview of MetaVid Wiki project and how that will make its way into Wikipedia, or sort of the target feature set. But of course, it's going to evolve with community input and participation as to what actually happens there. And then some walkthrough. I'll demo some of the tech. So why is open media important? It's going to make video a lot more like images and text are today. So it makes you don't hear a lot about DRM schemes for text or images, and you don't have free software having trouble playing back a JPEG, and you don't. And it's a lot easier to post an image to your blog and host that image yourself than it is to post a video to that blog and host that video yourself. So open media lets you address a lot of those problems. And the baseline reason is essentially free platforms can be first-class media citizens with playback and creation with patent unencumbered formats. It's just not really possible in the patented media space, as some of you may be aware or have looked into. But what are all these challenges to wider adoption? Well, first of all, there's a huge content base of proprietary patent-encumbered media out there, and we can't just pretend all that media doesn't exist. There's proprietary media frameworks like QuickTime and DirectShow, which are not free format friendly. We have BSD licensed components for both those frameworks, but it's not like they're going to start shipping those tomorrow, even if they're completely as free as possible for them to ship. And then you have the problem of hardware manufacturers are shipping chips that are hard coded to particular proprietary media formats. And that's also another big challenge. Like, you're not going to be able to view Wikipedia content on your iPhone, for example, without incurring a big performance hit for software in software decoding if the platform was unlocked to begin with, which is another problem. And then even more challenges is there's very few quality free software tools for creating content. So all the tools are in themselves supported by the companies that are promoting the closed formats. So of course, Adobe authoring tools aren't going to export to open media formats because they are the ones benefiting from the entrenched proprietary media format. But free software tools can't export to proprietary media formats without running into patent issues. So there's a double problem. But then we run into the final sort of question here is why push forward with these free formats if A, people can't view them, and B, people can't create them? So it is, we're sort of pushing out this ideology, is that more important than the accessibility for the majority of people? And of course, no, it's not. We need free software projects that do support playing and creating patent and cupboard formats are incredibly important, need to be supported, and of course they're not legally distributable, but we'll just have to pretend that doesn't exist and make it as easy as possible for people to download those proprietary systems from there, from within their Ubuntu. I mean, if you've seen the latest versions of Ubuntu or anything, you can sort of get a feel for how it's very like one click away from importing every free software package to decode all the proprietary stuff. But ultimately, we believe we can overcome these challenges, and I'm going to show you a little bit about how that's happening. Oh, it's really, can you guys read that very well? It's kind of dark. Well, oh well. So, overcoming challenges. The big problem is adoption, right? So we need to get lots of content out there. Recently, archive.org just transcoded their entire archive into free formats, which Wikimedia was involved in helping them push that along. And Wikimedia itself, of course, is the fourth largest website nowadays, and it's purely. Do you have a quick question? I'll mention that later, but yeah, they use the current Theora encoder, which yeah is not, but there is no the new encoder is not ready for large scale use, which I'll talk about later in the presentation, and. Well, of course, yeah. Archive.org has the original MPEG-2s and DV files that people upload, so, and it didn't take them that long. They have a cluster of 2,200 nodes or so, or machines, so they're able to transcode the entire thing over the course of a few weeks, so it won't be a big deal. We'll just, once the new encoder comes out, we'll just re-derive. Okay. Like, what did I get last year? Okay, and then, another challenge is, so you want to let people, so they've created their movie in Final Cut, and now how do you get them to convert it to OGG? What we've been working on a cool tool called FireFog that does in-browser transcoding and uploading. So the end user just goes straight from their DV file to the website, and we avoid the videos looking crappy like on YouTube, because we don't have to re-derive from some arbitrary transition format that people upload, because people can't upload their 14 gigabyte raw DV file to YouTube. But in this case, we'll be going directly from their DV file to what we'll be distributing on the site. There's lack of player support. That's sort of addressed today. If you view content on Wikipedia, I think we have a pretty good high hit rate for people being able to at least view the content with the array of fallback plugins that we hit. I'll talk a little bit more about MV Embed shortly. And then what I mentioned earlier, the proprietary frameworks, of course, don't want to support the putting our codecs into them, but it's not as important as we shift towards the web platform. And you notice that it wasn't a big deal that QuickTime and DirectShow did not support FLV. It just was able to push out adoption really quickly because the web platform is able to sort of shift that media production landscape. Mobile devices, of course, still a challenge. So the situation's improving with open source video editors, and again, the platform is the web, so we'll see in-browser video editors sort of dominating the casual video content creation market very soon, I think. And because of that, it will sort of need interoperable formats, and because free formats are, by their nature, easy to re-implement in other places without having to pay any licensing costs or having to reverse engineer somebody else's technology, you can imagine that, or we're going in the direction that it'll be easy for open source desktop apps to interoperably work with the web services that are based on the free formats, sort of enabled by server-side tools for doing those segmentations, serving up little pieces of video, and then also sending them back. So on to Wikipedia. So why are open media formats important for Wikipedia? Well, if we look at their mantra, we can say, you know, every single human being freely share in the sum of human knowledge. We can more freely share in knowledge with free formats. So obviously, if people have to buy software to view or communicate between each other, then that's a more expensive cost than a free format, where the tools to view and communicate with that media are free. So free formats for free content. Now I'm going to go into the technology overview of what we're aiming to put on there. So it features logical groupings for temporal streams that basically, I'll jump in, actually this is sort of an overview, I'll jump into each of these in a second. Transcripts, subtitles, annotations, categorizations, a library for supporting whatever system the browser comes, and so the client comes to the web page with this particular browser, maybe it's IE with Java, and then it's able to choose the right player for it. And then the collaborative video sequencing software that's also under development for allowing people to edit clips and things. So here's sort of the logical grouping of media that we're basically proposing. It's kind of hard to read, I guess, but basically lets you group together high quality and low quality versions of the files so that if you want to like go back later and rederive it, or if you have a high bandwidth environment, you can watch the high quality version versus the low quality version. But they're all associated with the same name in the wiki, or the same resource title in the wiki, so you're able to jump between the different formats. Likewise, the multiple time text layers can be associated with that same name, along with multiple audio streams. The idea being that you have a single resource name to sort of encapsulate all the timed media that is the same. So if it's time text or an audio track with the same, at 3 minutes, you're going to have the same content. You want to pull up the same thing, essentially. So all the time data tracks in the same grouping. And it's analogous to row-rich open multi-track media encapsulation, which is sort of an XML format for describing that resource. If we have more time, I'll go into more details about how that XML looks and what it aims to accomplish. And part of that stream resource name is that you pull into a transcript editor, so people can collaborate on creating those transcripts, and it gets associated with that stream namespace. And you can write, it's not multilingual supported yet, but it's one of the goals. You can sort of, the basic workflows, you sort of preview the video, set the in and out points, edit, and save. I'll hopefully demo that shortly. And it exports into an interchangeable XML format, and it would be pretty easy to write converters for other time text formats. And so, yeah, so you have that row XML, but what do you do with it? You send it to this JavaScript library that's able to interpret that row XML and say, oh, that my client has is localized for this language, so I'm going to send this language transcript to them. Or my client is, supports has lots of bandwidth, so it's able to send that to them, and it's able to map it. So my client has the VLC plugin. I'm gonna play back the video with VLC instead of Java, or make those choices. But then all those playback systems get sort of mapped into a single abstraction, so that the application, so like the transcript editor, for example, doesn't have to worry about what underlying plugin systems it's using. It just targets the HTML5-ish spec. It also does a few other things, like, here's a sample usage. it's very simple. Once the script's included, you can just use the video tag in your website, even if the browser that comes to visit your website doesn't support the HTML5 video tag, it gets rewritten to whatever they do support for playback. And so here's some of the plugin targets. You know, so there's a lot of ways to playback video in the browser, and it sort of tries to hit on all those. And it also has a fallback to, it's like supports multiple codecs. For Wikimedia, that's not necessarily too important, because they'll just be doing Theora at first. But in the future, maybe they'll have Dirac, and they'll need to detect, player support for that. And then, so essentially, but also it also has a fallback for Flash plugin on its current incarnation. It doesn't. The row format lets you set lots of, oops, here it is, multiple versions of the video. So you both have your high quality version, your low quality version, your Flash encoded version, your Theora version encoded version, your Dirac encoded version. But all those videos are the same video. Right. Yeah, but they could use the facility of it. It's sort of a stream selection process, so it could potentially use it once they support other formats, or if they have multiple quality. So if they have a high quality version and a low quality version, you could allow the end user to select the high quality version if they had enough bandwidth, similar to what they do on YouTube by choosing H.264 or something. And it also, in VMbed, the library also provides for remote embedding, and that row XML follows it along, so you can still, once it's embedded in some blog or something, you can still pull up the time text associated with your clip that you've included. I'll demo that too. Also has a seeking system, so for JPEG serving, so like if you're scrolling through the scroll bar, it can serve up a JPEG if you're plugin doesn't support local seeking. It's kind of, and that's also useful for the video editor component, so it can just pull frames from a given time, and that's sort of abstracted from the underlying plugin system, so that you can have your video editor and be scrolling back and forth on it, and then you get frame updates even if your underlying plugin system did not support serving arbitrary frames from the video file, or if you hadn't loaded it yet. Like what? Right. So his question was, could you include other metadata? And the answer is, yeah. The timed metadata that you're editing is arbitrary, so it's like as open as a wiki. So if you geotagged your in the same way that you geotag any wiki page today, you could geotag a temporal segment of the video, and that would apply to that piece of the video or the entire video if you wanted to tag the entire video as such. But so then when you're playing back the video, you would be able to programmatically access that that geocoded data. Okay, so we have this rich library for embedding media, and we need to look at the problem of finding media. And to do that, I'm working on a add media wizard, which is it's kind of a complicated diagram, so I'll try to explain it. It both serves, so within the sequencer, you need to be able to locate resources to add into your sequence. So we need to be able to search repositories, commons, for example, because that's Wikimedia's hosted image repository. But there's no reason why we can't add in other repositories like Medavid, archive.org, Flickr, arbitrary networks that provide either images or video with licensing data and can be searched remotely. So it's a generalized library, so each of those new repositories just become another object, and you just sort of can add it. It'll be easy to add in lots of remote repositories. And it's also, and since it's the output is not, is also abstracted, so you can, it can both output to a wiki page or to a sequence. So you can sort of use it as an add media wizard to send clips to a page, or you can use it to send clips to your sequence. And it's not tied to the underlying wiki, so you can also use this same add media wizard on your wiki too. So that's what all these little double lines situation is over here. So it's both, it's just sort of a shared library for injecting media from shared repositories. And it also, I don't have it showed here, but you can also, it also integrates the uploading system, and that'll, once the upload API for MediaWiki lands, which we're working on, you should be able to, from the same add media wizard interface, transcode within the browser and upload right into the wiki page that you're on, or transcode and insert right into the sequence that you're editing, or transcode and insert into the wiki that you're working on at some other website. It's not sure yet, but you can already add it as a user script. So you can already, I already use it for injecting images now. And I use it for injecting video too, and I'll demo that in a moment. And it also includes libraries for modifying that media. So you find this resource, and maybe you want to crop just to a certain section, or maybe you want to scale the image, or maybe you want to control the layout or position of it. That's all in the same library. So you can set the crop points for a given image, or if you're dealing with video, if you found a video resource, it'll let you set the in and out points for that video resource, and then you inject that segment. This is particularly useful if you're dealing with content like MetaVid is, where it's, you know, 9-hour streams. You want to just find the particular speech that somebody says, and you just want to inject that 30 seconds or so. It lets you, right from that add media wizard, it lets you select the in and out points and plop it right into the wiki. So now moving on to the video editor. Okay. Yeah, so it can upload content to using the MediaWiki API.
It's sequencing of a video from
It's all integrated. So yes, you can sequence from, once you, I didn't show this slide, but once you, it knows which wikis it's on, so it can be configured, so it says, oh, I'm on Wikimedia, I don't need to import commons, I can just reference it directly. I'm on mywiki.com, I need to import that commons asset before I can use it on my wiki. Or I'm on Wikipedia and I've found a MetaVid clip, I need to import that asset before I can use it. So it knows to check which context it's in and import or, depending on its context. So the target, the goals for the collaborative video sequencer is basic editing, some limited effects, and some, you know, transitions, simple things, sort of letting people string together a series of images, do simple overlays, and with wiki-driven templates, which means the template variables are stored within the sequence, so you can call a template. Here, I'll just show the next slide because it explains it better. Oh, but one more thing is the API for desktop editors, so it'll also integrate with desktop editors that want to collaborate on the video sequence. This will be a shared format so that they can import that sequence, make some edits, and save it out to the wiki, because this is all happening on the API level. So it's not, you don't need to load the wiki page if you don't need to. So say, for example, so some effects will be difficult to achieve performance in the wiki. So like doing some filter, for example, that'll probably be done on desktop video editors, and then once the filter gets applied, it gets, you know, it'll be flattened for the server. And that's using a GStreamer based, this is not obviously not done yet or anywhere near done, but the idea is to plan for that approach so that it'll be a interchange sequence format that can be flattened out. Right. Yes, correct. Yes, correct. So here's the screenshot of the GUI. I'll hopefully demo it in a second. Here's the XML, and you can see. So here's we're pulling in a template resource, and then we're passing it. The video title is My Fish. Then the date is 1952. That's just sort of like you set up this template as a your title frame, for example, or maybe it's just title overlay. And then that way you can sort of create consistent, a big part of Wikipedia is sort of creating consistency around content, so that a lot of editorialization is making it look and flow in a similar way, and a good way to accomplish that is with the use of templates. So we'll try to bring that metaphor into the collaborative video environment. And then you see the stream reference down here, and then again, it's pulling in the stream. So it's able to when playing back in the browser, it grabs the low quality AUG, but later on, if it's going to flatten it, it's going to grab the high quality DRAC version or the original MPEG-2 if it's referenced. So it'll be able to, by moving things over to a logical grouping in the stream namespace, you're able to do that. Or maybe you flatten it out to a different language, or you play it back and then you want to be able to select your subtitle track. Those can pull from the underlying assets. You don't need to re-subtitle any sequence that you're working on. You just subtitle the underlying assets. So then so it saves a lot of work that way. And then, so this is what it outputs to. It's a lot more verbose. It'll resolve all the string content, it'll resolve all the templates, it'll resolve, if you do sequence transclusion, it'll resolve all that out, output it to a format that's handable by that's self-contained format, so it doesn't need to do a bunch of API calls to re-derive the format that it's playing back. Okay, now we will show you some of this stuff in action. So here's the transcript editing. This is a speech by Obama on the bailout. You notice we have both annotative layers. I think it's a little harder to, you can see it's gray. The annotative layers are gray. You can sort of add in categories. You can add in bill IDs, and these are all sort of auto-completed based on so it knows a bill, it has to look in the bill category. It knows a person, has to look in the person category. How that'll map out into Wikipedia is still open, but the basic concept is you have sort of GUIs for sort of structuring the data, and those are sort of driven by templates. And then you can sort of save changes, and then you get your updated. So now you have. And these categories create lists of video that are about the bailout, but just the time segments of those videos that are about the bailout, the person debating that bailout, the person talking about it. So you're able to categorize sections of video, and that becomes and because it's not just categories, it's open tagging. You can do things like semantic queries, so like. Show me clips of Republican female congresspeople with more than $1 million total contributions that are presently in office. So you can, it brings a semantic query system into temporal media. and those become RSS feeds and could be, dynamically dealt with in other ways because they have programmatic output. And This one was find me interest. Oh, so this is for over $1 million from contributions from attorney and law firms. And there'll sort of be a GUI for making these selections. So like you could do the date range and you get sort of date range GUI. You do the spoken by and you get spoken by GUI. So you build these queries with a visual interface. You wouldn't want to be writing semantic queries by hand. That'd be no fun. And then, yeah, so that text editing we were doing, I didn't really show that part, but how are we for time? What's the, okay, cool. So, yes, so I am running the nightly builds of Firefox, which isn't always super stable. Okay. we'll load again. But basically, yeah, you can also set you can edit the transcripts, set the in and out points, and preview the video and make sure that the video matches the transcript, and then from there you just sort of save it, and then as this is done in aggregate and crowdsourced, you get high quality transcript material. In the context of Medavid, we have a closed caption feed that provides a certain level of accuracy. In the context of arbitrary video, you could use speech to text system, but again, none of those are 100% accurate, so you want to be able to crowdsource it, and not to mention the annotations and categories that are, of course, user generated and have user semantic meaning, which, of course, I mean, you can't programmatically generate. So you see the little options here. You see here, it exposes sort of the row features. So here we're able to download the files that that stream encapsulates, like the web streamable, the flash version, or the high quality version. And we're also able to grab a little bit of embed code to embed it into our blog. So you can see it embedded on a blog here. Takes a while to load over the wireless. Oh, there we go. Okay. And the important thing is all that metadata follows it along. So you can pull up your transcripts right here, and you can jump to a particular part of the transcript that's you're looking for, and that's just a consequence of the row format. We can play it if we want, but so, and then as it plays, it'll scroll the transcript on the right. Once it there it goes, scrolls along. Okay. Okay, so let's look at the Ad Media Wizard real quick. We can look at it. We'll look at it locally first, and then I'll show you it on Wikipedia to show how it handles a different context. So here we're in the Redditing article on the local host, and so this is just a bunch of text. We highlight a word. It knows to search for that word. It pulls up a bunch of things from Commons. Can pull up the next 30 results. There's a lot of photos of the piece thing. We find what image that we like. Zooms in, downloads a high resolution version. We can decide if we want to crop a section. We can preview the insert into a page. And now it knows that, oh, I don't have that resource locally. It's going to try to grab it from, it's going to grab it, copy it over to the local wiki. We can say do import resource. It goes ahead and downloads that asset from Commons. And then you can, doesn't always work. It did work, it just didn't know it worked. so now we're previewing that asset, and we can do insert, and it gives us the wiki text to insert that image into our text. And because we did a crop, it needs to have a little extra wiki text. If we had just done a normal insert, it would know to say if we just did a normal insert, insert into page, it just copies that image directly because we didn't do any cropping. And you notice when, okay. So then we can also use it on Wikipedia. And again, this doesn't, it's because it's a very high level, it's really easy to install onto any wiki. You don't have to actually ask permission for them to install it. By the nature of MediaWiki, it gives you user space JavaScript, which allows you to install this whole library without actually touching any of the code of the particular wiki that you're using the wizard on. So you can just click on Add Media Wizard here, we're on Wikipedia, and it's importing the Add Media Wizard from another server, and we get the same thing. Now it doesn't need to import the assets because it knows it's on Wikipedia. If we just click this picture of a sandbox, insert into the page, we get our little sandbox right here. I don't know if you guys can see that very well, but yeah, so now we get the sandbox right there. And if we wanted to do, you know, if we wanted to do crops or manipulations, it would know to do that. Likewise, if we pull in from, I don't know if I'll get a lot of hits of Congress people mentioning sandbox, but if we pull in from MetaVid, it knows that we can set in and out points of the video because that's the nature of the MetaVid site, because it's running Augsy Chop, which Conrad will be talking about later. So that we can, you know, set the in and out points, preview the clip, and then insert it into the wiki. Although it's waiting on one little patch to land to MediaWiki, which is just enabling remote injection, or enabling remote file uploads, which should land shortly. But then it'll be applicable to all wikis that have enable upload by URL. So we can go back to cancel that. Okay, so now we will look at the sequencer. So the way that the sequencer works, it builds on this concept of HTML5, which lets you do things like overlay, basically apply CSS attributes to video and to HTML on top of video. So it's very easy to plop your div on top of the video and sort of, so like if you wanted to do a fade from black, what you do is you plop a black div on top and fade it out over time, and then you get a simple effect. You can show this in working here. This is a smile file that it's reading from, and then it plays it, so it knows to fade from green, and then it'll cross-dissolve into another clip in a second here. There it is. It's kind of maybe hard to see there, but there it's switching into the eclipse animation, and then it cross-dissolves and done with the end. Correct. And then so this all becomes the platform for collaboratively editing sequences. Of course, it won't be visible for people that don't have HTML5 browsers, but what we'll do in such case is just flatten out the video or encourage people to download Firefox. So here's... Yeah. Yeah, so you get a lot of control over the video with HTML5. You can pull the time stamp from it and control, you know, its position in the stream, and you can do lots of things that just be very easy to do. The nice thing about it over the current Flash environment is that you can bring it into your system and start, you know, plopping things on top. Like it just deals with HTML and JavaScript much better, of course, than a Flash platform-based solution. So here we're in the editor. You can, do things like move clips around. It has keyboard shortcuts, so you can, you know, just press the delete key like a normal GUI application, and it deletes the clips. It also supports sort of copying and pasting with the control keys with bindings. You can edit the resource. So here, this one's a particular interesting one. We'll look. This is a template that's part of the sequence. If we edit the selected resource, it provides us with the template parameters as editable fields, so we can just edit those. It's still in development, of course, so there's not like a quick button to preview it or save it right now, but basically it is reading those attributes from the Smile XML, it knows to make that option available. This will be translated into more complicated situations where, say, you're collaborating on a long sequence and you have, like, it's made of four sequence parts. Each person would, or each group of people would work on a small sequence together, and then you could string them all together as a final product, or as a maybe more applicable for the wiki news context. We'll see how it ends up getting used and how it evolves with the community. So you notice different assets have different controls. So here's a video. You can set in and out points. You can set in and out points. Soon be able to set pan, zoom, crop type features, overlays, audio controls. They're not all implemented, but it knows once you switch to a different asset, like a template, you don't have the same. You can't zoom in on a template, or it knows that the template doesn't have audio. It's just an HTML file or an HTML resource. Wiki resource. So it knows different properties, or if you click on an image that's different from an image, just has a duration, it doesn't have in and out points like a video does. So, yeah. Okay. And then of course the ad media wizard that we saw earlier is integrated into the video editor. So once you're in the video editor context, you're hitting that same collaborative code base that allows people to import libraries for as asset resources. So once somebody adds archive.org to, or once, I mean, once anybody adds a new repository to any, for adding media to pages, it also becomes a new repository for the sequencer, and also becomes a new repository for any external wiki that directly links to the JavaScript. And it has, we'll have transition effects, normal cross, like the ones that we saw. We'll be able to enable those, sort of fade from color, cross dissolve. That won't be the focus initially, but it'll be left open for people that want to dive into infinitum of effects and filters and things, but it won't be the focus for our work. You can switch between sort of simple iMovie style or Final Cut style if you use those type of editors more. You're more familiar with those type of editing environments. It'll support that more or less. So that's basically the sequencer overview. You notice if you go to the, and then of course everything will be stored in the all the edits will be stored in the history, so you'll be able to revert changes people have made. We haven't nailed down the visualization of the diffs and or the interfaces for reversion and stuff, but that'll be sort of a evolve. At the present state, at least you have basic controls that you have for text, but obviously it'll have to evolve into sort of a more rich representation. If you look at, if you look on MetaVid presently, we already have sort of a rich representation for transcript editing. So when you look at the recent changes here, you're looking at, it knows that it's a time video segment that you edited, so it represents it as such. So you can preview what the edit was within the recent changes and get a feel for the accuracy or improvement of the transcript that they did, and if it's a bad one, you can just jump right into the improved transcript interface. It knows, jumps you right back to where that was, so that it's sort of adding tools to quickly jump between the various, extending the text system for video and letting people jump right into where they need to go to fix things or improve quality of the transcripts. And so that's just, I just show this as an example of how we might represent sequence edits. So it's easy to revert and get a quick visual overview of what's changed within a given sequence. Okay, I think there's a few more slides here. That's not good. Sorry. editor. Okay, we saw that. Demos, okay, thanks for, this is developed in collaboration with Kaltura, open source video solutions. And it's, Metavid is supported by a grant from the Sunlight Foundation. And I think we have an announcement today that Mozilla is sponsoring a 100K development grant for Theora that just got announced right now. And it'll be a 6-month project. It'll include encoder enhancements by Timothy back there. And it'll improve the libog pro library. And it'll also do aug network seeking and improve core library support by Conrad right over there. And he will be giving a talk right after mine about some of that stuff. And now we're open to questions, and there's my contact info.